This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. We all at some point have done something to sabotage ourselves. Just think about it. Have you ever put something off you really needed to do? Like a report is due tomorrow and you just started it the night before? Now that's self-sabotage. Joining me to explain why we commit these acts is Department Chair of Clinical Psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, Dr. Kim DelAngela. Thanks for joining me, Dr. D.
Glad to be here.
Could you tell me, why did you get into the profession of psychology?
Unlike some people, I knew I wanted to be a psychologist when I was something like in sixth grade.
Oh, wow.
I did this really cool project in science class that involved some psychological concepts, and I thought, this has got to be the most fascinating topic, an endless topic in the world, people and why they do what they do and how to change that. And so I was hooked, and that started my progress through school.
Oh, that is so cool. You knew so young. I think around the time I wasn't even sure what I was going to color with, but it's awesome to hear when people know exactly what they're going to do. It's like that was your calling. I know when I was in school, while you were figuring out what you wanted to be, I was always the type who procrastinated. If I knew a test was coming up, I would read a book I didn't have to. Or I would play a video games, you know, all the way up until the next day. Is that a form of self-sabotage, or would that have been just considered procrastination?
Well, first of all, I want to make clear that just because I knew where I was going or where I thought I wanted to be does not mean I didn't engage in exactly the same things you're talking about. I think the important thing to remember whenever you use the word self-sabotage is that it's a common behavior, and the procrastination is self-sabotage if it keeps you from getting to a goal that you have invested yourself in. So playing video games and staying up all night, for me it was binge reading. I love to read, and so I would stay up all night finishing a book and be a little bleary-eyed in the morning rather than do what I was supposed to do. But these kinds of behaviors are normal behaviors, common, and we talk about them as self-sabotage because other people don't understand why we do them, and sometimes we don't as well, and they apparently seem to get in the way of what we say we want to do. But it really, when you think of it that way, it fails to recognize that there's lots of purpose to those behaviors that we think are necessarily bad or useful. They're full of information about things we might want to check into for our path.
Why is it that people think there's such a negativity to it? I mean, when you go out and Google self-sabotage, there's like failure to not want to succeed or people who, it's all this stuff. I mean, if there's some good to procrastination too, I mean, why do people look at it so negatively?
Well, you know, partially it's the fault of psychologists, probably, right? we try to find when we started as a field in my field talking about self-sabotage, it came from this idea that you just said something about people who don't want to succeed, and actually, it's a lot simpler, but also a lot more complicated than that. And I'm not too keen on that idea of not wanting to succeed. I think I'm pretty sure everybody as a human being wants the same things. They want connection. They want respect. They want a little downtime. They want to feel useful in the world. They want to feel good about themselves and their purpose in life. And so when people are struggling with those normal human wants and they set a path towards something they think will get there, and it doesn't happen, people think, oh, they're just afraid of success, when really it may be that procrastination is or that behavior that looks like it's damaging is really trying to protect some other really important need for the person. So there's a purpose behind those those behaviors that are is self-protective, more so in most cases than it is just, you know, a silly behavior or lack of will, which a lot of people think of it as.
You know, I was trying to think internally when you're right, when I as a kid, I was always the not wanting to fail type of thing. So I didn't really particularly try. And I started sitting here and I'm like, you know what? I think I was more afraid of the rejection than I was about failing or succeeding. I didn't want to be rejected like, oh, my idea was silly, or, oh, you know, I'm not going to win and people are going to look at me funny. So, I mean, if you start looking more at yourself of why you do this, how do you overcome it, though? I mean, once you recognize it, like, oh, okay, it's there. How do you kind of like scale back on that behavior?
Yeah, well, that's the key part. In the media a lot, and for lots of good reasons, is the idea of mindfulness, or the practice of mindfulness that people are starting to, in the Western world, are starting to discover. This has been part of Eastern tradition for a long time. But just being a witness to your own feelings and your own behaviors, sort of stepping back a little bit without judgment, is really the first step to that. And saying, just sort of like watching yourself like you would watch somebody else, saying, I just noticed that. Wonder what that's about. And having a curious mind and an open mind to what you're doing, with the idea that you're doing it because it's important for you to do. Not that it's bad, but there's something there that you need to understand more in order to get it sweep it out of the way of the path you want. What would be the first step?
For people who have done this their whole lives, or at least they've been mindful of, hey, you know, I notice I'm doing this. Is this something that you learn to do from your parents, or is it from experience?
Parents have a really tricky relationship to this. So you, from your parents, you get the biology. And so underneath a lot of what's going on when people are avoiding or procrastinating or self-sabotaging is fear about the fear. But I'll just say it that way. It could be fear of losing connection with important people. That it could be fear of just any change as human beings are wired for being a little nervous in new situations. It could be disruption of our self-image. But how much we worry about that and how much we ruminate on it has biological components, too, which we inherit from our parents. So that's a first step. So we might have our alarm system or our anxiety system might be set on a biological level, you know, in the same way our parents are. We also have contributions. We've watched our parents or the people around us cope with change or have certain personal styles in doing so. And so we might feel, we might adopt those, or we might feel bad when we have not adopted those because they don't fit. So our parent, we may have self-talk that originates in our early relationships about how we should be doing things or the right way to do things. That even persists as adults, and we may not recognize it. So our alarm system for worry and fear might be high. Our self-talk about how we should be doing it may be high. And also, we also know that people who have the misfortune of growing up in households where they did not receive the validation, the love, the affection, the resources, sort of the nurturing that we know is important to having some cognitive flexibility and going through the world in a peaceful way. People who have been in those circumstances also are much more sensitive to rejection and sensitive to punishment in ways that can get in the way of making the changes towards big goals. That's just the parent part, too.
It seems like there's so much more to it. But for a lot of people, especially my generation, everything is DIY. You know, you want to cure your own diseases and all your own stuff yourself. But is this something that you should do alone, like if you want to change?
I don't know about should do alone. It's good to know the completeness of this, quote, problem that's so normal. And so there's a lot of good blogs out there and ideas out there about how to go through the to stop the negative self-talk that goes along with things like with the fears of rejection and the those sorts of things. But if you are really stuck, it is always useful to get some perspective from somebody who can look at the patterns with you, sit alongside you and look at the patterns. So that might be a trusted friend who is brutally honest with you. That might be a healthcare provider, a psychologist, or some other mental health care provider. It could be a clergy member. It could be a group of people you really trust who are on the same journey towards what you're trying to do. If you're looking to start your own business, you should be hanging around with very positive people who have positive mindsets towards entrepreneurship. And when you're there, you'll see what they're doing, and you can sort of tag along to that. If you're trying to lose weight, you should be hanging around with people who have a positive forward motion and are positive people who are losing weight. If it's about quitting smoking, it should be the same thing. We often get very ashamed when we're unable to change things ourselves. But what we miss when we don't get out in among other people, whether it be a professional or groups of people struggling with the same thing, is we never see that it's not just our battle, that it's such a normal human experience, and there are so many ways to solve it and supports to make life better once you connect.
You're right about the being ashamed. I quit smoking like a year ago, in a year ago August. And my mother and my sister, they both smoked, and they were able to quit like nothing. They smoked for 5 years. Boom, they're done the next day. And for me, it was years. It took me on and off like 7 years to quit smoking. And I was always very ashamed to tell people like, oh, I can't quit. I always told them like, oh, I don't feel like doing it today. Like, oh, I'll do it another time. And it wasn't until the last time when the nurse who was helping me, she told me, like, it's okay if you can't do it the first time. She's like, but you know what your triggers are, and you've learned how to do things. And I was like, you know what? She's right, because every time that I failed to quit the first time and the second time and the third time, when I finally was able to do it the last time, I knew all of my triggers and I knew how to work it out. So, but it was that shame to talk about it. You're right about that.
Yeah, and you know what? I hope the nurse also told you that three times, at least three times of trying to quit and having to and learn some more before it's really over, that is normal. Do you know that? That's actually the normal life cycle of quitting smoking.
I didn't know that. I don't think she told me that, but that makes me feel a little bit better, because then it's like, oh, I'm not alone.
Oh, all right. You're not only not alone, you're totally normal in your path of quitting smoking. You're like average, which I don't know if some people don't like to be average, but you're pretty average.
I'm glad to be average.
There's a comfort in that for most of us. Yeah. And that, you point that that's a perfect example of when we use words like self-sabotage, and we assign all of the problem in this to the individual as opposed to the conditions around us or our connections or our realistic fears of what's to come, and our hardwired normal pushing against any change and any difference in our lives. When you start to, you know, label it as just a personal problem of one individual, that's where people end up getting themselves into boxes where they can't get out of them. And so I think if your show is talking about these things pretty regularly, that's a wonderful thing, because the more people understand how normal they are, even the things they don't think are normal, I think the easier it is to figure out how to move forward with the support they need and the tools.
Absolutely. I think the normal part is so true, because when I was talking to the nurse who helped me, I told her, you know, I'm kind of scared to quit because it's been so many years. I forgot what to do with my hands. And it's something so simple, and it sounds so weird. Like, what do you mean? What are you doing with your hands? And when you're smoking, you have your cigarette between your fingers. You're flicking it. You're tapping it. You got your lighter in your other hand. You're always playing and fidgeting with something in your hands. And then when you quit, it's like, wait, what do I do? I just put my hands on my lap. That's it. And you become so aware of the weird stuff. But that's normal. And, you know, that's also when you're dieting. Hey, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of weird. What do you do when you're a little bit hungry? What do skinny people do? Do they just drink water? Like, how does this work? And it sounds so weird to say it out loud, but I think those are kind of normal questions to ask.
They are. They're perfectly normal. We are creatures of, if nothing else, we human beings are creatures of habit. And once we get into a habit, that habit owns us. And it's really hard to get out of it. And we need to accept that about ourselves. That's just how we are. And so these things that seem like they're minor to other people who don't do them are absolutely major to most people who have been working in a certain model for a long time. It allows us to forgive ourselves a little bit, too, and forgive other people. I think patience and understanding and really sort of forgiveness of our frailties is also part of the learning when you take on a journey of understanding this thing that's called self-sabotage and being mindful and really accepting that the progress is good. It's hard enough without beating yourself up on it.
You're right about beating yourself up. I love that you called it self-talk, because I would always tell people, oh, you know, when you're talking to yourself in your head, and it's always like this big giant phrase, but self-talk is a lot better to use. I think I'm going to start using that now.
I know, and there's all these memes out there about if you're talking to yourself, you're crazy, right? But we're talking to ourselves all the time, whether we're hearing it, you know, in the words or it's just sort of below the surface. We're doing it all the time and noticing when we're doing that and talking back to ourselves, right? Saying, oh, that was a stupid thought. You know better than that is really sometimes the key to breaking those cycles as well.
For those listening and want to know more information about you, where can they find you at?
Well, they can find me at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology in downtown Chicago. If you go on the website, if you Google my name, you'll find me. And there's a bio there, and you'll learn more about me. And certainly happy to answer any questions people have.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.